This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency last week set the nation's first ever limits on so-called forever chemicals in drinking water. It's a move that health advocates called historic, and one that a Cincinnati attorney has been working to make happen for more than two decades. Joining me in this recorded interview is that Cincinnati attorney, Taft Law partner Rob Ballot. Thanks so much for being here, Rob. Well,
thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Explain exactly what the US EPA announced last week in regard to these forever chemicals. What does this change mean for drinking water in the US?
It's a huge change. This is the first time ever that the top agency in this country, the federal EPA, has established enforceable drinking water standards, which means, you know, that these are actually now going to be law across the entire country, that establish essentially the maximum amount of these chemicals that will be allowed in drinking water supplies, public drinking water supplies going forward. Up to now, there really has been no federal enforceable standard. There have been some guidelines and recommendations, but this is the first ever actually enforceable standard that will apply across the whole country.
And in terms of what those standards and guidelines have been, how do the enforceable standards compare to kind of the amounts that have been in the guidelines up until now?
Yeah, well, you know, this family of chemicals, these man-made, what we call forever chemicals, or PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkylated substances, quite a mouthful. But there's been a lot of science that's emerged over the last couple of decades, particularly in the last couple of years, that have been showing some pretty disturbing potential health effects from these chemicals and showing them at lower and lower exposure levels. So what we're actually seeing here is the US EPA is actually lowering these standards and allowing a lot less of these chemicals than even their own prior guidance just a couple of years ago. In fact, in 2016, US EPA had released guidance saying no more than 70 parts per trillion for two of these chemicals, PFOA and PFOS. With these new enforceable standards that were just announced, EPA has lowered that from 70 parts per trillion to 4 parts per trillion, with a goal of zero, because these two chemicals are now considered carcinogens.
Huh. And you keep mentioning enforceable and how important that is. How will this be enforced?
Well, the US EPA can now require that public water supplies across the country meet these standards, and that they actually have to now start taking steps to treat the water or do whatever's necessary to try to make sure that the water that's going out to customers is in compliance with these new standards. And that's something that really hasn't been required up to now. Mm-hmm. A lot of water systems all over the country have been taking steps in advance of that to try to make sure that they're ready for this. But now with these enforceable standards out, it'll be required in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. So these water systems will have to test the water, make sure that only the allowable amount of these chemicals is in the water, and the US EPA can follow up and say, hey, we've tested behind you and it's, you know, you're not meeting the standard.
Correct.
Okay. And then what happens if water systems don't meet the standard? Do we know?
Well, this is all controlled by a federal law called the Safe Drinking Water Act. So the EPA has different things it can do. It can issue penalties. It can issue orders to require people to take steps to meet the standards. But a lot of this will be phased in over time. Mm-hmm. Because again, this is going to be a difficult thing to achieve across the country. A lot of water systems are going to have to take a lot of different steps to meet these standards. So the EPA and the federal government is allowing some time to implement this. There'll be a couple of years where testing will be required, and then a couple of more years being allowed in order to actually start meeting those standards.
Okay.
So a little time to phase it in.
Mm-hmm. There's some runway there for
Correct.
These water systems to get up to speed. Your work helped spur research that's found that most of us have these chemicals in our bodies already, in our blood. How much difference will these changes make in terms of what people are ingesting?
I think this will make a huge change, because what we now know, the way these chemicals behave, when they're released out into the world, they can get into the air, they can get into the water, the groundwater, drinking water, soils, they get into wildlife. But eventually what happens is they end up in living things and they get into our blood. And so people that are exposed to these chemicals, whether it be in the air or through soil or food or products or through their drinking water, these chemicals end up in our blood and they stay there and they build up over time, which is one of the reasons why the regulatory agencies are concerned about these things, because the longer they can stay in you, the more potential for harm. So we really want to minimize the amount of that chemical that gets in us and stays in us. So the most direct route of that getting into people's blood is through drinking water. So this is a really important step to try to minimize that kind of exposure from continuing to happen all over the country.
Mm-hmm. We're talking in this recorded interview about the US EPA's new limits on so-called forever chemicals. Talk a little bit more about the health risks associated with these chemicals. You said a couple of them have been found to be carcinogens, right?
That's right. Well, up to now, you have the chemicals in this family of PFAS forever chemicals, we now know there could be hundreds, if not thousands of them. The two that we've studied the most are two of these forever chemicals that have eight carbons, or they're sometimes called C8s, and that's PFOA and PFOS. And that's where we have the most data. And we've got data going back to the 1950s and 60s on animal studies and worker studies. And through the litigation that we were involved in here in the Mid-Ohio Valley, up outside of Parkersburg, where we spent years with independent scientists studying the potential health effects of that chemical, that independent scientific panel was able to eventually confirm that drinking that particular chemical, PFOA, was linked with six different diseases: kidney cancer, testicular cancer, ulcerative colitis, thyroid disease, preeclampsia, and high cholesterol. Mm. That really is what started to spur the EPA to start moving forward to regulate these chemicals. Over the last decade, since those findings came out, which was about 2012 when those six diseases were linked, over the last decade, what we've seen is the new science is showing even more potential adverse effects and, unfortunately, things that can happen at even lower exposure levels. Of particular concern to scientists and regulators across the world was the potential that these chemicals could affect our immune system, maybe even affect vaccine response while COVID was raging. So that's why you see the regulators and the scientific community really drastically lowering the amount of exposure that's allowed for these chemicals, because we've got this growing body of evidence that's really raising some red flags about potential health effects from long-term exposures.
It almost reminds me of lead exposure. The question of, is any amount of lead safe for a child to have in their system?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's why you're seeing EPA drinking water maximum contaminant level goals now of zero. I mean, that's pretty remarkable in our federal regulatory system, to have the federal agency essentially saying, oh, yeah, we should be striving for zero amount of these chemicals in our water.
Yeah. What will this mean for the people with the greatest exposure to these substances? Because some people are exposed to these substances at a much higher rate than others, right?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of ongoing research right now to, again, try to confirm exactly which additional health effects may be linked to these chemicals, to make sure that people get appropriate medical monitoring or testing, to look for the early onset of disease. We set up a program like that, for example, about 10 years ago out in West Virginia for the community of about 70,000 people who'd been drinking this in high levels in their water for many years. And we now have the federal government through the CDC and ATSDR also talking about the potential need for testing or monitoring. The National Academy of Sciences released a report that was looking at how much of these chemicals in human blood should trigger that kind of additional testing and monitoring. So right now, what folks are really working on is trying to get this information out to our medical community so that doctors, when people come in and say, hey, I think I might have been exposed to this, what should I do? we need to make sure that the doctors and the medical personnel are informed about this so that they know what kind of advice to provide. So that's going on all across the country and, frankly, all across the world right now.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll hear about the history of storytelling and a nearby festival that will celebrate it. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our recorded conversation about the US EPA's new limits on so-called forever chemicals. My guest is Taft Law partner Rob Bellott. You've been working on this issue for more than 20 years now. Tell us the story of how you got involved in this work.
Yeah, I think it started actually back fall of 1998. I was working at Taft and got a call from a gentleman who identified himself as a farmer out in West Virginia who was having some trouble with his cows. He had a landfill next to his property, and he could see that there was white foam coming out of the landfill into the creek that his animals were drinking from. And as he saw these animals drinking more of this foam, they were getting very sick. Their teeth were turning black. They were developing tumors. Calves were having issues. So he was reaching out to me to try to figure out what was going on. How could he get some help to stop it? You know, and we agreed to take that case on back in October of 98. And that really led to what became the next several decades of investigation into what these chemicals are, where we first learned they even existed, and digging through company files and helping get that information out to the rest of the world, to the scientific community, to regulators like the EPA, to alert them, hey, these chemicals are out there, and they may be presenting pretty significant threats to human health and the environment. Because what we had been seeing in these documents was that the companies making these chemicals, and this goes back to the 1940s, 1950s, they were fairly well aware of the dangers these chemicals presented, but unfortunately had been covering that up and withholding it from the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time to get that information out. We met with a lot of resistance from the companies, but we have eventually been able to get that information out, and now we're seeing the results of that with the laws starting to change, companies switching away from these chemicals, trying to use safer alternatives. So it's been a long process, but we're definitely seeing some positive results.
And remind us what products contain these chemicals, because they're used, or they have been used over many years in a lot of different products.
Absolutely. You know, these chemicals, again, have been used since right around the time of World War II. In all kinds of different products. And it's very difficult, really, to come up with a comprehensive list, because even some of the companies that were buying these chemicals from the makers didn't even know they had them, so didn't know they were in these products, and only recently or just now finding that out when testing of their water or their products has been revealing it. But typically, if you see things that are marketed as stain-resistant, waterproof, non-stick, grease resistant, that's where these chemicals have typically been used. So lots of clothing, carpeting, fast food wrappers and packaging, but then things you wouldn't necessarily suspect, like computer chips or dental floss or mascara, waterproof mascara and cosmetics. And if you jump online now, you're seeing an incredible, dizzying array of different products that may have used these chemicals over the last several decades.
Now, I read, and I may be wrong about this, that you were representing chemical companies at the time this farmer contacted you. Is that right? And if that's right, what made you decide to kind of switch teams, so to speak?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was at the Taft Law Firm. I started there in 1990, and I'm still there, 34 years here in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. At the time, a lot of what I was doing just happened to be for a lot of big companies, including some big chemical companies. And a lot of the work I was doing back when Mr. Tennant, the farmer in West Virginia, reached out to me. And so when we took this case on, really didn't take it on thinking it was necessarily going to be that big of a difference. I mean, we were representing all kinds of different clients, not only companies, but individuals and governmental entities. So, our approach is we represent clients, whether they be companies or individuals or other entities of any kind. And I really, you know, over the years have tried to do my best talking with different lawyer groups to help them understand, you know, we should see ourselves not as company lawyers or lawyers for plaintiffs, but lawyers who represent different clients.
Yeah. How did you go about, you mentioned this town in West Virginia where there are 70,000 people who have been getting these tests and getting evaluated over years now, thanks to this work that's been going on. How did you go about getting the scientific research that federal regulators said they needed in order to take the action that they've just taken?
Well, that's been a long process. It started by uncovering a lot of this data within the manufacturer's own files. Folks like 3M, who invented a lot of these chemicals back in the 1940s, DuPont, who was using one of them in particular, PFOA and making things like Teflon. So not only were we collecting these internal studies of animals, laboratory animals, but also worker studies and making those available to the government, these non-confidential documents, but also setting up this process where we created this independent panel to not only review all of that data, a lot of which wasn't available, wasn't published, it wasn't in the peer-reviewed literature, but we made it available to these scientists and we provided them funds through these settlements so that they could do new studies big enough to actually confirm some of these health effects like cancers, which often take tens of thousands of people to find these effects. So it's been a very long process. And as that data finally emerged and we were able to confirm these links with disease in 2012 through this scientific process, that also spurred independent scientists and other organizations to begin their own studies. And we've seen a real avalanche of new data and new studies coming from all over the world. And that has finally turned the tide here with the regulatory agencies who've said, looking at this data, you know, it's a pretty overwhelming conclusion about the threat here, and we need to take these steps now to address this in the water. And that's what we're seeing begin to happen now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you've been educating not only regulators and scientists, but the public too about this. You wrote a book. There's a movie based on your book. How important do you think making the public aware of this has been in the process of making these regulations happen?
You know, it's critically important, and it's really something I wish I had really focused on and understood a lot sooner. You know, there you can make all kinds of filings in courts and send letters to regulatory agencies, but that doesn't necessarily get the word out to the public, particularly when you're dealing with a massive public health threat like this, and one that's pretty complicated, that involves a lot of big chemical names that you really can't pronounce, or you know, you can't see or smell these chemicals. So how do you effectively alert the public to a threat like this? And so really working with screenwriters, movie makers, you know, putting the book Exposure together, for example, you know, trying to find different ways to help get that story out in a way that makes sense to folks so that people here in Cincinnati or in other parts of the country or across the world realize what happened in this one community in West Virginia is the same thing that's happening now across the country and across the world. And we've seen dramatic change once those movies and films and book came out, where the laws have started to change. And consumers, now that they're finally educated and starting to become aware of these chemicals, they're reaching out to companies saying, we don't want you using these anymore. So even before the laws have changed, companies are able to come forward and voluntarily change their products. They're starting to take these chemicals out. So the market is now forcing change as well. Mm-hmm. So all of that combined, I think, is resulting in what are pretty amazing changes happening right now.
Are you frustrated by how long it's all taken?
Absolutely. You know, it should never have taken almost 25 years to get to this point. You know, particularly when you're dealing with such an incredible threat to public health and the environment like this. But, you know, it's one of the reasons, again, I wrote the book, Exposure, was to try to explain how does this happen in the United States and how does it continue to happen even when you know this is going on and this data starts to finally come out to the regulators, why does it take this long for these rules and laws to change? And, you know, it's a very frustrating process to play out. But I'll tell you, it was incredible to be in North Carolina last week and see the US EPA officially announcing these final standards. You know, again, something I thought I would never see in my lifetime. I never thought I'd see the President of the United States talking about the national PFAS problem. But I think it's really a testament to the power of getting information to the public, getting the story out in a way that people know why it's important and why we need to do something.
Yeah. These changes are going to result in significant costs for water utilities across the country. You mentioned they have several years to really, you know, get this up and running. Who do you think should pay for those changes?
Absolutely. This is going to be hugely expensive. And it's one of the reasons right now that our firm, working with others as well, representing hundreds of cities and counties and municipalities all over the United States, including here in Ohio, you know, to try to make sure that those costs are not pushed on to the taxpayers or to the customers or the cities. In other words, the victims shouldn't be paying for this contamination. So we're pursuing litigation, trying to make sure that the companies who created these chemicals and pushed these out into the world knowing this contamination would happen, but did it anyway, that those folks ought to be paying. We're also representing states, including the state of Ohio and other states, to try to make sure that the costs of contaminating fish, soil, wildlife, natural resources aren't pushed onto the taxpayers. So all of that litigation is continuing. And luckily, we've been able to announce settlements valued at over $14 billion so far for just the public water systems in Ohio. Settlements with 3M, DuPont, and one was just announced Friday with Tyco, a foam maker. So we're making progress. But, you know, this is going to be a very expensive proposition to deal with.
Yeah. How are the chemical companies reacting to this? There's a lot of money at stake for them, isn't there?
There is, because when you think about it, you know, these are, again, completely man-made chemicals. They don't exist in nature. So when you find these chemicals in your drinking water or in your soil or in your own blood, they're essentially fingerprints back to these a fairly small group of companies who created and pushed these chemicals out into the world. Those are the companies that are now fighting these lawsuits. And it's not just here in the United States. It's all over the world that these issues are popping up and litigation is beginning. So we're seeing a real fight because the potential liabilities here are huge. There's already been one company that's a manufacturer of firefighting foams where these chemicals have been used for many years. A type of firefighting foam called aqueous film forming foam, or AFFF. It's a type of foam every fire station, airport, military base has used for decades for petroleum fires. Well, one of the makers of those foams has declared bankruptcy already. So there's a real concern about making sure that these costs are not pushed onto the victims, but also that the money is still there to pay for this. So it's a big problem.
Yeah. What kind of conversations have you been having with the folks in West Virginia and the other people, the plaintiffs that you've worked with for all these years? What did you hear from them after this announcement last week?
Well, I think there's a lot of folks that are sharing the frustration with how long this took. You know, that, again, if you think back and look at the history here, Mr. Tennant, the farmer in West Virginia, you know, first came to us in the fall of 1998. And we first started writing to the US EPA about the need to address this in drinking water in March of 2001. So here we are just now getting to the point where we're beginning to address these in this country. So it's a process that has taken way too long. And it has allowed people to continue to be exposed and to be injured for many years. But I think there's a lot of folks, though, that are also optimistic that this story, if anything, shows that change can happen. Somebody like Mr. Tennant speaking up, even if he's going against one of the biggest chemical companies on the planet or going against the U.S. regulatory system or the legal system and being told, you can't do anything about this. You can. And this story shows that people can change these huge systems that seem unchangeable.
Well, I've been talking with Taft Law Partner Rob Ballot. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Up next, we'll talk about the history of storytelling and hear about a nearby festival that will celebrate it. This is Cincinnati Edition.